Episode 7 is here. We've talked about it numerous times that we didn't know we'd get this far, but man, I'm telling you right now, based on what we have in store, this is going to be a top 5 all-time episode.
I mean, the demeanor right off the top. We know what's coming. Already ready.
Yep. So Brian and I have talked about this this whole podcast that we would use this for a platform that we could give everybody a chance to say their side of the story. So we had a good week, good weekend. Zach Brewer Memorial was awesome. Great modified racing. Got to celebrate the whole family. Everything was cool. Had a hiccup in the Charger class, as always. And then we have to make our decision as far as who did what to who and when. And it's so hard. So we want to take a chance this episode. I think we're going to get to shine a light on the drivers, give them their chance to speak their minds, and then we get our chance to then put our piece in.
Yeah, it's hard to make that decision, but at least you know the parties involved seem to be the same parties involved every time.
Yeah.
So it's always a little bit easier on us and just kind of factor in all that and all the above and move forward and how to move forward from it so it doesn't create more of a fiasco than it already is.
Oh, yeah. So with this, again, platform, is that we're here to lay it all on the table. Everyone gets to see it. Everyone gets to hear it. So at the end of the day, there's no questions. There's no
it's going to be great.
We always soon be awesome.
Viewer discretion is advised.
100%. With that, we'll talk about kind of the car store. I guess we can kind of talk about that. I think they had a good show for their first event.
Yeah, sent some guys home. I saw, I think they, 36, 37, and they start 30. And they're pretty concrete on that 30 starting. Yeah. I know we had, a couple of years ago, we had 44, 45. We just start everybody.
Yeah, everybody.
Yeah. I just sent a couple home.
Gets tighter, but.
Yeah, we probably should send people home, but that's just kind of who we are. We want to give everybody the benefit of the doubt. But yeah, they sent some people home. It was a good race. But Connor Hall got his first. Was that his first win? No, he won at Hickory last year.
Hickory, yes.
So that was his second win with Junior Motorsports. Yep.
Crazy line though. I think watching it, we just literally got done watching it, the highlights anyways. And you would imagine a place like that with a D shape that you'd go top and bottom. But man, they were just running the bottom the whole time. So to your point, as a driver. What was the move there?
Yeah, I think it just speaks volumes about how much tire saving that you're doing. You're just wrapping the corner, and the steering wheel is already straight, and you come off that low. Now, later in the race, you've seen them start drifting up a little bit higher because the pace picked up.
Yep. Well, my pace wouldn't pick up.
Come on. Put yourself in that scenario. No, Martinsville, though, it's no tire saving.
No, it's fine.
Plenty of grip, balls to the wall.
Yeah, it's fine. Someday I'll be good. This show, though... I was going to talk a little bit about the modifieds. We're going to have a special guest. We have numerous special guests coming up. But our first one is going to be Chris Williams talking about the weekend, talking about the upcoming modified stuff. We led into all of our episodes leading up to the modifieds that we're here for Zach Brewer. I think we did a great job. I think everything we talked about that we wanted to do to honor him, we did.
Yeah, it was very receptive on the drivers and teams. I mean, they went above and beyond for us, carrying the flags. And anything we wanted to do to honor Zach, they also pitched in and helped as well.
Yep. I think Owen was right, though. One thing I screwed up on, I ordered the flags, but I did not make the poles long enough. So a couple cars got hung up in the
left rear. Stayed cool because they were running on cloth for the pace laps there.
Couple things that didn't go exactly how I planned, but, Doug Brewer – got a chance to drive in front of the field in Zach's car, and I know that was emotionally challenging for the family in general to see the 31 on track, and then for Doug to drive it. I know he said he was having a tough time. I had a chance at the end of the day. I had very specific things I knew I wanted to happen for the event, and the last one was I wanted the 31 to lead the field, or not lead the field, sorry, lead the winner. Around back to victory lane, and I was kind of standing on top of the grandstands, just kind of admiring everything that went down with Zach's stuff and the modifieds in general, and then kind of looking at our turn because we had to go to our broadcast after that, and then it hit me, and I was like, man, the 31's got to get out there. So I ran down. Doug was down there. I got in the 31, asked him if it was okay, got in the 31, and got to drive it onto the front stretch. Missed that end of flow. It kind of ended up on our broadcast. Really just wanted to make sure the leader followed the 31 back to somewhere. And we got that, but and the reason I'm bringing that up is, man, it was so cool to get back into modified.
I was about to say, I bet you got an itch. You wanted to whip it around and start cutting some laps.
Not only was it Zach's, obviously that meant a lot to me just to be in Zach's car and have a chance to drive it, but just hearing that sound, feeling that feel, being in modified again for me, man, it was awesome. But, you know, again, Zach Brewer Memorial went off without a hitch, I think. You know, we did everything we needed to and I wanted to. Family smiled, family cried. I mean, that's just part of it.
Yep.
But
very receptive of the event in general.
I think so, yeah.
I think the wife and Avery, Kim and Avery had a good time. They gave it to command. Yep. Everybody looked excited doing that. It was a good time.
Yep. No, it was good. And then the race overall was good. You know, we watched it back and we didn't make the decisions, but at the same time, I think we agreed with the decision as much as we wanted. We had Luke on the broadcast. As much as we would have liked to see him win, I think we both agree he deserved to go to the rear.
Yeah, he kind of sailed her off in there pretty good, which, I mean, Joey Mea could have got in a little bit deeper. They were working with a lap car, which just happened to be Luke's brother, Jack.
Yep.
And I don't think there was anything done purposely there. No. It's just the way it goes. So Jack is on the lead lap. So if a caution comes out, he's still going to be on the lead lap. Everybody's ready to pit, which they did. So Jack's sitting there fighting. Like, if a caution comes out, I'm going to get a right rear tire, and I'm still in contention here.
Yep. And I think we just got done watching it, is that, you know, it's hard to process everything that's going on live, but when you take a step back and look at it, three lefts to go, though, is it time to come in? Or, so Blake Barney, who ended up being the winner, he just took the chance and said, screw it, I'll stay out front. And with three lefts to go, and then it ended up being, green-white checkered, really.
Yep.
Did you take that chance on a right rear? Is it that important?
I mean, I would follow Barney's mentality. I would have stayed out. Track position, I think, is pivotal, especially when it's only a green-white checkered. But about Carlson, I mean, Crum got there at the end. He was right there at his left rear coming off a four.
One more lap, and Jake Crum wins that thing.
Yep.
And if anything, I might be wrong, but if Jake Crum stays out, I mean, obviously his car was good.
Yeah, I was really surprised that Slate Myers pitted, because he would have inherited the lead, and he had pretty good pace. So he was the first one out, because he restarted fifth, and then Crum was sixth. And I think someone may have missed a shift there that was restarting third. But I think it was really Slate's to lose, and unfortunately, maybe he lost it.
Yeah. Well, so there was some things within that race that were in question. It's always tough. We talked about it last episode that, you know, calling a race is not easy. And there were some things that, especially when you start putting into place this caution and that caution, and we're going to do a break here and a break there, and this happens. When you put too many moving parts into something, that makes it so much more difficult to process. With us, on our normal day, it's caution drops. Jacqueline hits caution on the computer. We line them up accordingly, and then we go back to green. But when you start adding in all the things, that makes it difficult.
They had a lot of variables that they were trying to navigate through. First and foremost, they got David Hoots calling the race, which – David Hoots has a resume that speaks for itself.
Of course.
And then they had their own score there beside him. And they kind of are old school way, which I'm sure David adapts to, which is nothing wrong with that. But our score loop here is a little bit different. So when Jacqueline would hit caution, of course, everybody knows that races with us, we revert to the last completed lap. So the scoreboard goes back one. And they were adamant about it needs to match what they had on, because that documentation. So if somebody wants to argue something at the end of the race, we were here, we were there. They do have that documentation. So they wanted all that to match. That's why there at the end, the board said 96, but then it said 97. It was a green-white checker. They wanted that, which they got what they wanted, which I think is good, because they're ones who have to fend off them battles moving forward.
Yeah,
it was good. They got a lot of variables they factor in that we're more used to having the brakes where everyone could take tires, having the pit stops and how they come down pit road and how they rejoin. I think that kind of created a little bit of a debacle for them late. I know scoring, putting them in the right lineup was an issue there late. If we're going to toot our own horn, it was kind of nice to sit back and watch it and the spotters yelling, and we're just it's not us.
Yep. The, I think when you do the standard moves, it's great for what we do, as far as calling the cautions and lining everybody up and going back to it. But the fans, I think what Chris is doing and what they did, Blake Barney technically, what we were watching, it was, what, 8 laps to go? He's in 13th.
Oh, yeah.
And ends up winning the thing. So I can see where we've talked about 100 times is that it's so difficult because we want the fans to enjoy themselves, but we don't want to put ourselves in a bind to have to deal with that stuff. But end of day, Blake Barney comes home a victor.
I mean, it adds an element of excitement, which you got to have, especially with a touring division.
Yep.
I mean, these guys, you're going to see some comers and goers each week because some people is going to adapt to the track better than the others, whereas opposed to us, I mean, you kind of got the same guys going to run for a win every week.
Right.
So no matter what we do, it's going to be that same crowd.
Yep.
Where them, they go to a new track, you're going to have some people that's going to be fast off the trailer, some people that get there and practice, but some people that want to play the strategy. So, I mean, there's so many different elements that go into it. I think it creates a pretty good, exciting race.
Yeah. So, modifieds were here. I love it. It was my favorite part of the year. I enjoy watching the modifieds. I got the chance to drive one. I went from 6 to midnight, as always, whenever I get to drive a modified. But we're going to have a chance. A super exciting show. Episode 7 is not going to disappoint. Up next, though, we're going to have a chance to talk to Chris Williams, talk about what his thoughts were on the race, what his opinions were on some of the calls, as well as going to his next race in Anderson.
Yeah, they got a lot of stuff coming up this weekend. They were saying Anderson. Yeah.
So they're busy. He doesn't stop. He did a good job of, no different than you know, because you build the schedule, is that he's fighting a schedule to go not against Modified Tour, not against Upstate stuff, not against Bowman Gray. So he kind of has to go hard week by week by week to get his in to then take all of that off. So they have.
Well, Boo and Aaron told him that last week with their Star Superstock Tour. It's not as easy as some people think it is. It's not just like when we're racing, you got to put the pros and cons and see what, like, I make a spreadsheet and see what tracks are racing here. When's NASCAR racing? Because you're going to lose some fans. You may lose some people at Rockingham this year. Unfortunately, we're racing the same weekend and Rockingham's coming back, so we may lose some racers. I already had tickets for that.
Yep.
So there's definitely pros and cons that go to it. It's hard to make a schedule, and you got to be very thoughtful for doing so, but I think Chris does a good job.
Yeah. So, again, it's a challenge for them to go to back-to-back-to-back. But speaking of challenges, looking over there now, your mic stand seems to be staying pretty strong.
Well, I'm not touching it. I mean, you already said episode 7 3 times, so I know that the viewers are already drinking. You already said ladies and gentlemen.
So. Yeah, it's a lot. So everyone's drunk. But Chris Williams is coming up. There's certain guests that we'll talk about at some point. I don't want to really
get I do like that. The way we're going, though. I'm talking more, and I think I've talked the whole That's first good. 6 episodes.
You're welcome.
Thank you. No You're raising welcome. Hands or anything. Yeah. This is awesome.
Which actually, so in that, the people haven't actually seen, there was an episode, or last episode, Brian, I didn't see the part where you raised your hand.
I did.
I know, but I'm saying, like, when I was editing it, I couldn't find
it. No, I was just sitting here with hand raised and whatever, and you finally acknowledged me.
Yeah.
Which maybe you didn't see it because this tree grows every week.
Oh, it's the most natural tree ever. But, no, a lot of exciting stuff coming up. Episode 7 is here. Episode 7 is going to probably be, I know it's going to be the greatest when this is all said and done. But up next, we're going to have a chance to talk to Chris Williams with the Smart Tour. And then after that, we're going to go to some really cool stuff. So stay tuned. Episode 7 is here, and Brian's got the outro.
Yeah.
No, the
Chris Williams, come back.
No,
I'm sorry.
That one.
There you go.
Yeah. Nice. We'll be back. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. And I'm going to say ladies and gentlemen because I don't care at this point.
That's what he does. That's what he does.
It's like to my go-to. But we are here, and we welcome in Chris Williams. The Smart Tour, we've talked about it over the last few episodes of our podcast that, I've been fortunate enough to race in the Smart Tour with Randy Myers back in the day. I did the Modifieds back at Myrtle Beach. But man, what you've done, Chris, has been incredible to bring back the Smart Tour stuff. And I can't thank you as a Modified fan enough. But welcome to our podcast, and thank you for last weekend.
Yeah, well, thanks for that. I kind of owe it to a lot of the teams and the drivers who wanted to bring this back a few years ago, and it's really been fun. Anybody that's ever been around a modified, the passion that they have for them, and not just for the sight in itself, but the smell and the sounds of what the modifieds go through. And any one of us that has history
with the modifieds, you know,
they've been around the longest running division, not only in NASCAR, but in most of these tracks up north and some on the East Coast, it's where it started. It started in the modified division. And so to come to Florence and race at your facility, one, you have a passion for the modifieds. I know the background of your family and your history has a lot to do with that, plus the competition side of it. But to come to Florence and kick off our season, generally in the warmth. Last year we had a little bit of rain. We kind of joked about that last week. Newman said he was had rooster tails flying a year ago, but this year was couldn't have been better. The facility is enhancing itself every time that we come. You guys are just doing leaps and bounds with the racetrack, and our guys love to come and kick that the season off with you every year. And this year, of course, being with Zach Brewer Memorial, I know your relationship, not only with the family, but with Zach, you was passionate about it even last year when it first went down. You said, I am going to be the place to do it. And I appreciate that because I wanted a destination for it, and you pretty much guided me there. So the passion that you have for your friendship and the relationship that the competitors have with Zach, Zach would have been proud this weekend to have the competitive race that we had. Let's be honest, rookies everywhere. People don't really understand the youngness that's in our series right now. And I've said this to a few people. I'll say it out loud. There's a gap between the legends, the bandoleros, and whatever to get to the next level. There's a gap to where it's going to, unless you have deep pockets. The modifieds is a landing place for that, as we've seen not only with Carter McMurray, but some of the other ones that's graduated from there, you know, and be 14 years old and to see, you know, the Joey Brons, you know, finishing in top three and Slate Myers finishing in the top four, Carter McMurray, first ever race in a modified, finishing the top five. And let's don't forget Jack Baldwin, you know, even though he's not as young as they are, you know, racing with us and being as young as a contender for the rookie of the year, he done extremely well. And those rookies shined. And it showed when you get six or seven of those rookies in the top 10 in our series with the 27 champions that are in our series that race it each and every week with Newman and Burt and, you know, Joey Coulter, who dominated up until two laps to go.
Yeah.
It's strong.
It's strong not only to show their talent, to be in equipment that they have. It was impressive race to watch these rookies do what they did, and this week outshine the veterans.
Yeah, so it's crazy to think that when I was, and this is years ago now, when I was coming up, I had to be 16, and I had to fake ID myself into NASCAR. So my mom, like, she wrote down, so my birthday is 8/1/81, which, Brian, go ahead and tell everybody my favorite story about that.
Oh, MTV. Yeah. It's been started.
Yep. Yeah. So MTV.
Video killed the radio started.
Yeah, MTV and I are the same age, but back then, my mom, like, scribbled 81, to make it look like an 80, to get me into the, to be able to run in a street stock back then. And now. Yeah. We are now into 12-year-old children that are racing, and it blows my mind. But the problem is it's not a problem. It's just that they're that good. So well, they're just as capable of doing it as you know, the veterans. And you watch them, the Keelan Harvicks of the world, you know, when he's running his pro, and you watch the Carter McMurrays. I mean Carter didn't have probably the weekend that he wanted, but as far as not being afraid to race against a 12-year-old, he proved himself that he's capable of keeping up, and he's capable of being smart enough to not because that's the fear, like with Owen, right? Like I kind of live with both sides. I live on eight sides of the fence. I got my side where I think I'm a race car driver. I got the father side of I think Owen's a race car driver, and then I got the racetrack side thinks that Owen's not capable of racing against people. But you see these kids. And they're just they're knocking it out of the park. And they've proven that a 12-year-old can do it. And we can't go any farther, I don't think, right? Like, is 12 as far as we can go? It's got to be.
It's going to be. And I'm going to tell you why. It's really not about the acronym, because these kids have racing acronym. And what I mean is they have situational knowledge because they learn so quick, not only because you're a racing family and how they've been taught, but they have access to sims. They have access to other things that nobody has. You can actually go onto a racetrack with these sim rigs and run these tracks prior to going. And that's knowledge that we didn't have as we were trying to race. Right. And
so now you say that
the insurance is going to start dictating that. And it's got nothing to do with their acronym. I'll say this cliche. It's hard for a veteran to race with someone that's young and hold his emotions in if something was to go wrong. And so it's
not mostly about how that is perceived,
because the younger generation has a little bit less tolerance to push the button, to run a little bit harder if they're not taught that acronym.
And so it's going to ruffle the feathers
of the older folks. And then what happens when you have a minor sitting in a race car and there's confrontation?
Sorry, Chris, but I have lived and breathed, and I've told Owen this, and so I really think actually Morgan probably would have been my better race car driver, but I would have been okay if Morgan was my race car driver and she was out there and she went up against the dudes and got punched in the mouth because she did something wrong. Wow. Once you're in a car, it doesn't matter if you're a female or your age. Once you strap in, you're in it like that.
I think Ward Burton said it best years ago with Chad Little. Like, he might be 200 pounds, I might be 150, but when we're both strapped in that car, we're both 3,400 pounds.
Yeah, but we all been raised better than a man to hit a woman. Okay.
I get it. But so, I'm just saying,
so
like,
we're going to say that. But I understand from a competition side, they're not going to separate male versus female when the competition runs out. I understand exactly where you're coming from. And that's going to dictate that.
But these kids, where we were in a go-kart at 12 to 14, they are in a go-kart at 8 and 9.
Yep.
And they're learning all of those.
I mean, your son, I'll tell you this. Me
and you hadn't had this conversation. You know, Owen, I can tell, really has respect, knowledge. You know, I was up in the suite for the crate race, and he's, you know, come up there and talked to me as a younger gentleman with respect, and that's taught, right?
Yeah, of course.
Respect your elders, and he handled himself extremely well, because you can tell people that don't have that, and they can't talk to somebody older, and Owen handles himself well. But these kids are now understanding that not only they're 12 years old representing sponsors, representing brands, representing family,
representing racetracks and other things, that they have to
hold themselves accountable. And what's so cool about that is you're teaching them what we were taught getting into college or whatever, the end of high school. They're being taught in elementary of how to conduct and handle themselves in that type of environment. So our growth is happening much sooner in all of these kids, and it's shining. And the racing community has a lot of respect. Sometimes it's not shown in a race car. And I think it tends to handle itself, if you understand what I'm trying to say, from the other competitors. But it is starting way, way, way earlier for sure. Yep.
Well, and I think that goes back to what we talked about with Carson Hostvar, was it last week, where I think you're going to see the competitors, like the older competitors that have been doing this for a long time, they're going to take the kids, the 12-year-olds, as long as it doesn't get completely out of control, they're gonna treat them like Ryan Blaney did. They're going to treat them like Chastain did, where they're going to talk to him like a brother or a sister and say, you know, hey, like, we get it. I know you're new to this, but.
Well, I think it's a sort of an ego thing where they're veterans that's been in the sport a long time, that they see these kids up and coming, and they got talent. And it's almost like, I've been doing this for many, many years. There's no way you're going to come in here first year and going to show me up.
Yep.
So, I mean, that drives their, you know, compassion about it, their drive to will and win. I can think back to Myrtle Beach back in the day. There was a guy named Don Smith. I mean, he was phenomenal back in the day at Myrtle Beach. But he, like, showed the way to Brent Brinson, another late model driver. And Brent was pretty quick off the get-go. And Don was like, there's no way Brent's going to show me up this quick. Yeah. And he did.
Yep.
Great to see.
We're going back and forth. But Chris, I guess what I wanted to say to you is thank you for continuing to bring the modified world to the forefront when it comes to the South. I know it's easy up north. You know, we live and breathe that stuff. But to continue to push the envelope and continue to make modified racing great in the South, you've done an amazing job. And like we talked about at the beginning of this little conversation is that I know Randy Myers kind of started a little bit, and then you just have taken the reins and just like Brian and I would, just make it better. And we appreciate that. I appreciate it as a modified fan.
Yeah, well, I'm having fun doing it. I've always had a passion for the modifieds with my history, with my dad being a GM at Martinsville, you know, the 69, 70, 71, you know, Gremlins and Pintos and Coupes and, you know what I'm saying, all of those Vegas and all those stuff was really cool for me to watch. And, you know, I live on a racetrack road in the Martinsville Speedway, and my mom and dad still do now, but you know, you got Flute Hudson that is right on the hill. You know, you had Clarence Pickerel, you had Clyde Barber. I mean, you had all Mason, you know, up the road a little ways, and all these guys that was competing even up north, you know, with them lived near you. You know, it was the talk of the town, and it was just so much fun to see, you know, races at Franklin County and, you know, Hickory and South Boston and all of these tracks. And then you start, you know, the whole Bowman Gray deal. It was the happening back in the day. There was a racing Friday and Saturday night anywhere you want to go. Sunday most of the time, three times a weekend, and the whole family went. Everybody enjoyed it, and it was fun to grow up in that environment at the Speedway and seeing my heroes, you know, Richie Evans and Charlie Jazombeck, and you know, you see all those guys from up north, Bug Stevens and Fred DeSaro. And then you had our hometown heroes with Ray and Jimmy and Satch, and get to know them at a level is even better. And today, I that's why we still honor our legends, is because, you know, they drove me as a kid to want to race, to want to be in racing. And that's what I've sold my whole life. And so modified racing for me, I'm here to keep it going to the best of my ability with the, you know, proud sponsors that we have. And as long as these guys continue to, you know, showcase, look, they're not making money. I mean, we can sit here and talk about this all day long. They are not making money. They're doing it because they have a passion for it, and we've got to figure out a way to make them race. And, you know, a lot of people right now, it's our series has grown so much in 5 years. People don't even know it is 5 years, but you know, we're a professional sports league now, and everything's a problem. You know how everything becomes a problem. You have to do this right, and you have to do that, and it's too many rules. You know, it's too many motor combinations, and yeah, maybe we do need to rein that back a little bit, but we've progressed to here, you know, to have these folks in here to do this job, and a lot of people want me to do more, but at the same time, I've got to have that cushion in between us officiating some other things so I can be the ear for those guys to come and talk to me to make it better for all us as we grow. So I'm here to keep modified going as long as I can, for sure.
Yes. So everybody wants you to do better, like no matter what it is, whether it's Florence Motor Speedway or it's the Smart Tour, they assume we're supposed to do better. And I can promise you right now that the conversations you and I've had, the conversations you, Brian and you've had, you're doing your part. You're never going to make it. It's never going to get exactly right because they assume we're supposed to do different, no matter how that plays out. And, but I'm appreciative of, what you're doing and, hearing the Satch's name and, things like that. So Brian and I have a weird, relationship when it comes to, he says late model stock guys' names, and I don't really realize them, but, when you said Satch, I immediately knew Whirly. Oh, yeah. And where Brian probably was like, what did he say? Did he say Satch? but like I said, just to run a series is so difficult. And we talked about it a little bit with Aaron and Boo, yep, the last episode, is that everybody wants it done right, but they want it done right in their mind. Like, they have their own opinion on what right is. And it's so difficult because there's so many moving parts to a series, whether it's modifieds, you know, like for you, I'll say this. And again, this is why this podcast is here, is that for you, without us, you don't exist. And without you, we don't exist. So there's such a weird balance of like, you need us and we need you, but we also don't need you. But you need us. So it's such a battle of like, how do we make all this work?
Help me help you. Jerry Maguire, right? Help me help you.
Exactly, right.
It's funny you said that. I wrote an email today to someone and said that exact same thing. I mean, you know, taking a quick look at what you're saying, you know, the racetracks have to do everything they can to benefit what's going on. And everybody knows how the back gate works and front gate and, you know, sponsors, commitment and what they're trying to put in. You know, and that money's going into that purse. And that's the one thing that I do every race is I look at grandstand and look at how much they're bringing in, back gate and stuff. And I see the struggles. My structure is a lot different than most race series, but I do it because I understand what we're all trying to accomplish. And that's not to lose a lot of money. Right. And I do things differently for each individual sponsors. I do things individually for Hoosier. I don't take tire money like other people do. And a lot of people get mad at me for doing it, saying I'm crazy. But at the same time, I've got to give back certain things that I can't put in the purse from just a cash value. And it's not to take advantage of them. And to touch on the thing that you said that everybody has an opinion. Well, they're vested in it, Zach. They've got money vested into their hobby. And they don't want people to take it take advantage of it or screw it up. And at the same time, you know, they've been around a long time. You generally hear from the people that's been in the sport 18, 20, 30 years because they have an opinion because they've earned it. You know, they've earned that opinion of seeing things done wrong and at least gives your ideas. Sometimes it can't do it because of cost. Sometimes you can't do it because of the organizational structure for what you have available to you. But you still try to do those things to help out all of them, you know. And I've been trying to help out that 11th place through 25th, and that's how we've grown so far to get it. And you've got to continue to do that. And you think about the people that continue to run that is progression more and more and more in the series. I mean, I think about just our finishing order, and the guy that. I mean, probably impressed me as much as anybody, and the rookies have their talent, but look at Daniel Yates. You know, Daniel Yates puts his heart and soul into it. He's getting much better each and every week. He's invested into the series. You know, he ran a great race, great restart, great strategy. See him, you know, in the top eight is impressive. I love it. And that's what you're trying to get them to do. I mean, I hate Jimmy Wallace. You know, had issues that he had, and you're going to have that in auto racing. But one thing I will say, all in all, in the racing in itself, it was a lot of respect. It was a lot of give and take, a lot of cars sideways, a lot of things happening. I mean, we had the issue with Luke. I think Luke just ran in there a little bit too hard at a certain situation. But the tires were so gone at that point, it wasn't going to take much anyway, right? So. But I think all in all, the respect is there. These guys respect each other's racing, and it's good. But I appreciate the older guys, and I appreciate the opinions. That's one thing that I do. And Zach, you're vocal and you're receptive, just like I am. I never leave the racetrack until I try to talk to 90% of the drivers and the teams because I want them to get it out. After the race of what's on their mind. So they're not tearing down their pit crew. They're not tearing down their wives and their family about something negative. At least get it off your chest. I may not respond immediately to that night, but generally on Sunday after I rewatched the race in the broadcast and, you know, how things handled itself and ordering a new cone for myself. But you kind of get that mentality of I'm here to listen. I'm going to be vocal when it's time to be vocal, but I want that done at the heat of the moment, not arguing, not fussing, just expressing each other's opinion. And then we'll address it on Sunday and Monday and be gone with it.
I try not to. I used to address it on Sunday, but I would like to take Sundays off because no matter how you do an event, somebody's going to be upset on Sunday. And
you got to do it fresh in the moment.
Yeah. Sure. They want to have that conversation. And I guess you know, I just appreciate everybody, and I appreciate the passion. Really, I don't hate on the text or the calls on Sunday. I just would like to take a day off.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I just go back to growing up, man. Like, it's just people got to understand that racing is fun, and at some point, like, you're going to have your bad days, you're going to have good days, but at some point, you're going to wake up 20, 30 years from now, and you're going to say, man, how fun was that? Like, that's yep. where I'm at. Like, so I go back to what Chris was talking about a little bit, is that, so one of my favorite memories, and I don't actually have this memory, but from what my mom and dad tell me, is that Richie Evans, whenever he came to town, he took me to breakfast as a child. And that's something that I don't remember, but I live and breathe by, and it sits in my brain saying, man, how cool was it to be a part of something that these kind of people had that passion for, and you got to be a part of something. So what you're doing, Chris, you know, stay strong, stay committed to what you're doing. It's all playing out because the racers appreciate what you're doing, because I'm telling you right now, I know in the tower, you know, I know we had, like, everyone's going to have a question on what you did, why you did, like, and I'm speaking on Brian and I's behalf, is no matter what we do, we didn't do it directly how they thought. But when it's all said and done, man, it was racing. We were at the racetrack with friends. We had a great time. There will be times you'll look back on it and you'll be like, man, that was the greatest time of my life. So I just appreciate what you're doing with the Smart Tour.
Yeah, well, appreciate it. Love being at the racetrack. Love doing. So, you know, I just have that passion for it. Going to continue to do it the best we can. There's going to be calls and stuff that you got to make. There's going to be tough decisions that you have to make, and there's got to be a decision, right? It's right or wrong. It's going to have to be. And like you said earlier, it's not going to make everybody happy. I get it. But at the same time, you know, if we don't progress forward with the series and doing the things that we're doing, then what happens? You got $100,000+ race car, you know, collecting dust.
Yep.
And you need them on a racetrack for sure.
So we'll end this with, I know you guys, we talked about.
First of all, I got to interject.
Raise your hand first.
Yeah, I know.
Right.
So, Chris, Steve never calls upon me until I raise my hand. Like, I'm a student, and this is the class, apparently, even though it's on tap with Steve and Brian. But nonetheless, you got guys got a lot of stuff coming up. But we all share the same passion for motorsports, and we all share the same history. And that's what brought us into it. But I can say that I don't know if Steve and I share the same Academy Award winning nominees you do in your videos.
I know where he's going.
These videos last year. Oh, dude, my gosh.
Brian, so Chris, Brian, when you did that thing, we talked about it with Luke, when you did that deal on the jet ski, Brian lost his brain.
I'm a movie buff, and I see Weekend at Bernie's like, oh, my God, there's no way. And you pulled it off to a T.
Yeah.
It was good. It was good. These guys are good, man. They, every year we come up with something. We got one cooking right now. It's unbelievable. It's good. We've got everything in play. We got all the stage props and everything. So it's probably in the next 3 weeks. But it's going to be good. But I mean, it's fun to see Ian and JB and Dillner and everybody sitting around talking about what's the next thing and, you know, who looks the part or who can play the part or the next one's going to be good. But it's fun to do because we don't have to be serious on everything that we do. Right?
That's right.
We can make fun of ourselves. Just like when the cone got crashed this weekend, you know, we threw it away
today. It's heavy, by the way.
Yeah, well, it's very heavy. I think it got some weight on it.
The new one is not as heavy. We got a brand new one. And yeah. We're going to debut it at King of the Modifies that is coming up in 2 weeks. But you know, you got to make fun of yourself, and you know, you can't make every decision right. You can't be 100% bulletproof. And you know, little laughter won't hurt. And but these things have gotten so fun. I mean, Luke, Carson, everybody that's been in them, Bert, Jason, when we done six pack. I mean, every one of them. These guys are characters, and you got to bring them out because it's fun to do. It's fun to be around. You know, and we're trying to get more people involved. And do some other skits, but we're going to continue to do it because it's too much fun. I mean, when my mom I put her in the car. She's 80-some years old as the Cougar.
And I told Mom, you want to do it? She said, absolutely. And they're like,
can you get her in the car? She said, I got this. You know, 83 years old, climbing in and out of the race car like it's nothing. And we see grown men barely can get in them and out of them. So
it was fun.
it's actually amazing. So Brian loves all of them. He from the start of what was the ghost one?
Well, the first one I saw was trying to find the Smarty in the schoolhouse. That was pretty
good.
That was a good one. But to your mom getting in the car, my grandfather, who's 97 now, he was getting in the car 3 years ago, first leg in, like the old school stuff. So it's amazing.
For a video. He's trying to race, right?
No, he's just trying to get in. He's still, my grandfather would start and park because he won $100, but that's a whole different conversation. But it's cool, man. Like I said, whatever we're doing, whether it's these podcasts, whether it's coming to the racetrack, whether it's putting on a race, we're doing it for a reason. It's because we love it.
It's about fun, having memories. Like you said, 30 years from now, you're not going to say, oh, I won that race. No, you know what? I had fun at that race. That's what more meaningful than anything else.
Yep.
Well, I tell this all the time,
and I'll say it, it's true. The moment you make, you know, is what it's all about. And the time you give somebody is the most precious thing you can ever give them. If somebody needs your time, whether it's bad, good, indifference, or whatever, you're taking and giving that person, you know, your attention. Because, one, they either need it, or number two is they need to express something to you. So time's the most precious thing you can give. And being at the racetrack is exactly what you're doing. You're giving your time to the competitors, to your teams, to your sponsors, to your race fans, to the track promoters and everything else. And we cherish those
moments because they create the moments we live for.
Yep. So Chris, we'll kind of finish off. Give us a breakdown. I know it's, like I said, we talked about earlier, it's quick. We gave you a kind of a heads up, or gave everyone a heads up on how you have to build your schedule, because I know you work really hard, just like Brian does, to build your schedule to not afflict or conflict with anyone else. So that puts you in a situation where it's back to back to back and then take a huge break. But that means Anderson's coming up next. So just give us a heads up on what you got coming up and what Smart Tour has in the future.
Absolutely. We, we kind of front loaded,
speckled out through the year, back loaded and work around the stadium and stuff. And, you know, we got Anderson coming up, first trip there. Scott Childers and him had a long conversation with him today. He's excited about having us there. It's actually Pace-O-Matic's backyard. A lot of people, our sponsor, doesn't know. They're right there in Hartwell, 15 miles down the road. Got a contingency of fans and people that's coming there. Suite, we got the suite and stuff up there for them. So it's going to be fun. Cannot wait to race Anderson. We've got 20 cars already signed up. Again, so that's it's superb. And then today we just sent out the entry for the King of the Modifieds, over $100,000 purse, $20,000 to win again. The format, the only thing's different than last year is we may do a last chance race. It really depends on how many people show up and actually enter. We'll probably do that, which that kind of changes tires and some other format stuff you got to do. But we moved it qualifying on Friday at 5:00 because the track just couldn't get everything that they needed to. And we've got to make sure the track's, making back gate money and other things as well, along with our show. And so we wanted to accommodate them. So we just released that out today. We're going to release some sponsor stuff tomorrow to the public and the next couple of days. But then we take a week off because I learned last year, you don't run anything after the King of the Modifieds. Because there was so much, honestly, last year was a lot of wrecks. They couldn't get the cars done in 7 days. And so we then go the first week of April to Orange County. We love going there to battle at Rougemont. We got the belt up on the line again. Everybody loves that race. Sometimes you're not racing for money. You're only racing for the trophy.
Yep.
And so they really like that, gravitate towards that. And then, Hickory. Hickory is a mainstay in the modified world. One of the longest running racetracks in grassroots racing. We love going there. Tire wear's phenomenal. These guys love running Hickory because of its history. And so that kind of wraps up a little bit of our 5 out of 6 weeks running. And then take a month off and we go to Franklin County, which everybody loves to go to. I can't talk enough about Franklin County from a standpoint. The drivers, when they go in, Ryan Preece, this is the best story. I've said it a couple times, but I got to say it again. Ryan Preece was like, "Why do you have us at this rat hole? Have you lost your mind? You are crazy." He goes out, runs about seven laps, and I see him walking towards me at a fast pace. I'm like, "Oh, he's pissed about something. Must be track tore up or something. I don't know what it is." He said, "This is the best freaking racetrack I think I've ever ran." So that's the mentality of Franklin County. It's a struggle to see it, to get there, but man, it's a great, great racetrack to drive on. And to compete on, because it's two grooves and it is fast, and they love going there. And so we've got a first part of the season coming that we really like from a schedule standpoint. Our guys are pretty pumped about it. We've got a lot of people calling about the King of the Modifieds already this week to come down there and enjoy that race. And the second one's going to be as good as the first one. And, you know, the track's pretty pumped up and excited. They're doing a good job of pushing the narrative out forward, and it's going to be great. Yep. On March 22nd.
So Brian enjoys all of the modified stuff, but I will say that so I have to kind of lean on Brian. If Brian decides that you can't come back, it's a Brian problem, because when he found out Money Matt wasn't coming.
Oh yeah, what in the world? Huh.
Yeah, like so unless Money Matt's coming,
I lost some money on that then.
So pretty sure Brian has put himself in a situation. If Money Matt's not here, we're not having modifieds.
Yeah, he generally comes. You know, they're
shops in the PD, nonetheless.
Yeah, PD Motorsports. Yeah,
they're right there. I know they had
a tough little bit of what's going on in Smyrna. I know he was working on some combination stuff that they need to get done. He just couldn't get it done in time. He really wanted to. He's definitely coming to the King of the Modifieds. But normally he's there the first couple of races. It's just they couldn't work it out this year because of some stuff that they needed to get done on the race car. But, I mean, generally he's with us the first two or three races of the season, sprinkles here and there, and then, you know, Wilkesboro, whatever, at the end of the season. So it was different not to see him there for the first time, but I don't think it stopped the show. I mean, from the standpoint
of competition.
Even for betters like myself, for betters that you bank on Matt Hirschman being here, he's not here, and you don't know who to pick on, and then you may think of your big names. For Blake Barney to win it, though, that just says that the competition level is so high now in the Smart Modified Tour.
Yep.
Blake Barney's a class act.
You know, he went through a tough situation. I know it's been talked about 25 times since Saturday night. You know, but, you know, they were competitors. They had the same exact motive to come down here and win a Smarty. They probably was better prepared the last few races that they ran with us last year than they were this week. And I'm not saying they weren't prepared. They won. They just didn't feel as good as they normally do. It didn't really fall in their place. They earned what they got. They made the tire
change at lap 30. He saved a little bit of tire
throughout the race. You know, go time had the situation with the O2 being spun and them, and then Slate pitted. I mean, it would be a really, really, really close battle if Slate and them hadn't pitted.
Brian said.
But at the same time, Blake earned it. He's a winner, a champion in our weekly racing. He now understands how it is to win, and it could take different positions to win instead of dominating. But those opportunities that you take come and is well deserving. A lot of people don't even know this, and I told him this, but the one thing that, you know, everybody goes after is the belt. And I actually made a belt for Florence Speedway for him to have, just because, you know, he had that opportunity taken away, and I feel like he earned it back. So I'm making sure he gets that for sure. So that's a good – yeah.
Yeah, Brian loves some belts. Yeah. Brian's a wrestler.
I want him next year. He's great.
Yeah, Brian's a wrestler at heart. But so we'll finish this off just saying, number one, thank you, Chris, for what you're doing.
Academy Award winner to be.
Oh yeah, for sure. And then also thank you for giving us the opportunity to always be the opening race for your Smart Tour, but also thank you this year for giving us the opportunity to be the Zach Brewer Memorial, because you know, for myself and for the family, I think I talked to Kim Sunday morning. She came, picked up the last little bit of flags. Morgan, by the way, sent that flag you texted about. It's out today. But man, just a great day to honor someone, and I hope that you were appreciative of it, appreciated it, to the point where, like, I plan on that first opening race being Zach Brewer Memorial.
Being a staple event, yeah.
Being a staple and coming up with a way that it just becomes bigger and bigger every time. This first one was all about the family, giving them a chance to smile again because it was tough. The whole thing's been tough. Today, actually, as we record this, was 365 days since Zach passed away. And we're not going to get into what happened, but just a tragic situation, but a great dude and a great family. And I think they appreciated everything you did. I think they appreciated everything we did. I think it all went off without a hitch. I think the show was great. And I just appreciate you knowing that I wanted it and knowing that I wanted to make sure it was good for Zach. And thank you for everything you did.
Absolutely. And appreciate your
passion that you have for auto racing. Appreciate your passion you have for life, for, you know, the people that you honor. Like I said in the beginning of this deal, you was definitely wanted to be the one to raise their hand and do it. It shows that racers.
Yeah, we lost him. All right, well, we lost Chris, but I know where he was going with it, so it's all good. There's a question mark on the screen that I can't get rid of, but that was Chris Williams with the Smart Tour. We look forward to you know, more things with him in the future. But I'm telling you right now that you can have that question mark on the screen, but
there's no question who runs that series.
Well, that too. But I'm saying we're about to get into some stuff here that you guys are gonna love. So stay tuned. Because this episode is about to get real.
Exclamation. It's changing from a question mark to an exclamation mark.
So you're seeing it on the screen. Those that are listening to it on the podcast, you don't see it directly, but there's a question mark on the screen. But I'm telling you right now that there will be no question marks coming up. We've got some exciting stuff for this episode that Brian and I have been looking forward to. So stay tuned. We got more on tap. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. And I'm going to say it because that's just what I do. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome.
Episode 7, go ahead.
Drinking
game. Old spill, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to episode 7. And welcome in. We had a chance. We talked about it in the break that we were going to talk to Donald Clark. Donald Clark, a true competitor here at Florence Motor Speedway. Welcome to On Tap with us, Donald.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, so let's start off with just everything you got going on racing-wise. I know I'll go back to, 4 years ago now we got here.
2020.
It was a roller coaster ride of who was driving the 40 car and who was driving, you know, with Van. And I know you had your own thing and there was a whole thing. So, but here you are today with Van. So just kind of give us a breakdown of Donald Clark and how you got to today.
So I raced probably 15 years ago. 2004, 2005 was probably our last year's racing. Run the truck series at the beach was the last thing I run. And got out of it for a while. And Van called me up one day and needed some help on the car. So I volunteered to come help. And me and another driver switched in and out the car for a little bit. And Van decided that we would buy a new car and kind of went full time. So really didn't expect to be racing now, but here we are, and we're gonna make the most of it.
So Brian and I think he was thinking the same thing I was when you said it. So when did you run the truck at the beach?
They said 04, 05.
Oh, so we weren't there.
So you were racing against, I'm correct me if I'm wrong here, Clay Thomas in the 16, Jimmy Harrington in the 6. Is that the same
Clay,
time frame?
Jimmy, Strom in the 7. Ronnie Daniels.
Flash.
There was bunch of Brian Blackwell, all those guys that raced back then.
Okay, I remember.
So I thought I heard you were running the trucks at the beach, and then I went to Brian and I. So.
Well, I'm not going to toot my own horn here, but we all know when Brian falls in the trucks. What happened? Okay, sorry.
Here we go.
But we raced. We raced back at Somerville. Did really well there. Hated to see that racetrack go. It was a really good racetrack, and ventured out to Florence a little bit when Charlie had it, and ultimately we started racing the beach, and that was kind of the farewell deal. When we quit back then was at the beach and just went on to do different things, but you know, racing come back around and figured we'd give it another shot.
Yeah. So it's cool to see someone that, you know, I think Brian and I, between our beach stuff, like, obviously your beach side on the 04 and what Brian talked about, he's lived around there and dealt with, been around Myrtle Beach Speedway a long time ago when, people were coming up that I don't know anything about, unfortunately. But man, for you to stick around through the 04 stuff and then through the Somerville stuff. And I still say that, end of day, I think one of the, so the Myrtle Beach thing closing was a one thing that I'll say that probably stick with me that is a, you know, heartbreaking, but I think Charlie not making it, past, 3 weeks when, we took over. So we took over July 6th of 2020, and he passed away August 1st, 2020. But what I'm getting at is, Donald, you've seen Charlie do Somerville. You've seen Charlie do Florence Motor Speedway, and you saw his passion for racetracks and racing. And in my head, it just hurts my feelings to see something that kind of went away a little bit. Like, Brian and I, you know, we kind of sat at Myrtle Beach and watched what Charlie had going on here. And he would tell me every time, and he told that to Brian when we first met in the house here, as he's 83 years old and he just wants to see the racing come back, here. But you got to kind of live through that and try to support him. And, we appreciate that.
Yeah, it was an awesome deal with, you know, racing with Charlie. I actually live probably 10 minutes from where Charlie resided at here in Monk's Corner. He was always right around the corner. His race shop was there, you know, so he always had an open door over there.
Yep. And so for those, Charlie was a racer at heart, and we just got done talking to Chris about, you know, racing is a passion that that people just don't understand. You know, we have our days, we have our good days and we have our bad days, but at the same time, racing is just something that when you're at the end of your days, you're finished and time is up, you get to have all those memories and just get
it's,
to.
It's crazy how the whole thing comes around to tenfold.
Yeah.
It's such a tight-knit family. Like, I'm originally from Georgetown, South Carolina, obviously, and my granddad owned a car for so many years. Robert Powell drove for it, Johnny Warren, Jerry Williams, a lot of guys in the 90s. But I remember when I was 10, 11 years old, like my first, I guess, upbringing in the racing was working for Tommy Bird, TWB Motorsports out of Munts Corner, South Carolina. And they had Sonny Driggers, Derek Driggers, Robert Powell was driving. I'm a lot of guys from the Munts Corner, Somerville area, so I was very familiar. So seeing them guys when I came back to Florence, because they didn't come to Myrtle Beach so much. I mean, Ronnie Daniels did, obviously, Flash, we called him. Ronnie was – one thing about Ronnie, he would want to win practice. Like, I don't care, I won practice. Right. Okay, Ronnie, good talk.
That's all he cared about, was winning practice.
It was good. And if you talk bad about it, he'd cut you. He's like, I got a knife, I'll cut you. Right, okay, Ronnie. So you never talk bad to Ronnie. But it's great when I came back here with you at Florence – and seeing a lot of the guys I knew when my upbringing from Myrtle Beach days helping Tommy Bird, like I said, it just came tenfold. It was good.
And we're just all race fans at the end of the day. Like, we all, like, I think we're, you and I, and I'm not going to speak on your behalf, Donald, but Brian and I don't believe we're going to go to the Cup Series anytime soon.
I'm still hopeful.
fingers crossed.
it's a passion. It's something that we all love to do, and, you know, we're very passionate about it.
Yep. So you tied in with Van, and Van's a good dude. Like, Van is, you know, he's worked really hard. And like I said, I know CJ grooms, like, Michael had a great weekend this weekend.
He did.
But I believe it was CJ, for the most part. You were kind of back and forth with CJ at the first, and then now Van's, you and Van have tied in, correct, to kind of be full-time?
Yeah, so CJ actually raced for his grandfather. It was CJ's dad that we shared the ride with, and then he kind of stepped aside, and now me and Van are tied in.
Yep. So with that, you've had the last couple of years. Last year, obviously, you know, Ricky, I don't know how to say it. Ricky's got a good piece. He's got a good car. He's a good driver. You know, everyone's got their questions on, is he doing something a little outside the box or is he inside the box? And that's something that we put on Mike to, continually, keep up on to make sure that he's making sure that everyone that comes here has a fair shake and no one gets an advantage. But
we also pay attention. And, like, we can't stand one particular car or truck dominating.
Right.
And I will give Ricky credit where credit's due. He's very smooth.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
he ran out there with Matt. He's very smooth. Like, him and Matt Cox in the limited late model race last year, like, he gave Matt plenty of room. Matt gave him just enough room. And Matt's accustomed to doing that, racing late models, of course.
Yeah.
But Ricky held his own, which I was pretty impressed by, I ain't gonna lie.
But you're right there. Like, you're inches from that situation to be just as good. Like, you and Van have worked really hard, you guys are on the cusp of being a winner every single week. And I know you take pride in being competitive, and so we'll just tell you right now that we know you're going to be a champion in Florence Motor Speedway's series, whatever we're doing in the future.
I appreciate that.
So, but with that,
Ricky, very few cars can compete with him.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
But Donald,
except for Donald.
He worries about a very few cars probably, but I know that 40 car is always up on his radar.
Yeah, 100%.
Every time.
Yep. Yeah. The
40.
He can't take it from Ricky.
He drags his feet when it comes to qualifying. He drags his feet when it comes to cutting the fast lap in practice. What's that 40 car doing?
Yeah.
Like, so you're always mindful of what's going on in the pits.
Yep.
I mean, he's at the top of his game right now, and you can't take it from him. He's a great driver. He's got a good piece. I mean, he's fast week in and week out. I mean, it's like you said, you got to give credit where credit's due. And I mean, he's on top of his game right now.
Yep. And the obviously the Charger side, like, both of you are probably like on the cusp of being limited. Really, like, you're kind of like the limiteds and the Charger side have become so close, but the limited side where it's different is the two new, two scuff or four new, and the scuff tire situation is something that is difficult. You know, Brian does an amazing job, and I'll sell this to whoever wants to hear it, is that Brian works his tail off to make sure that everybody has a set of tires to his best ability that are equal. And
no offense, Donald, but I said this on the last episode. Like, I don't care about any of you guys.
Yeah.
Like, I can get out there and drive too. I want to. I don't have the financial responsibility to do it, but I would love to. So
yep.
I'm not giving any favors this way or that way.
Yep.
I promise you.
Yep. But Brian puts together tires that are equal for everybody, but that doesn't make it the greatest situation, right? Like, so Brian puts together the best tires he can, and you have to do what you can. But end of day, the two of you have been at the front of the field every single week. It's always tit for tat, if you will. So you should be proud of yourself for being a part of somebody that, like, when you show up at the racetrack, it's so I've always, my family back in the day, you know, when you showed up at a racetrack, you knew who was going to be a part of the winning group. Like, you kind of had idea. You had you knew the Zacharias's and the McLaughlins of in my world, anyways. We're going to be a part of something. But when you show up at Florence Motor Speedway, you know Donald Clark, Ricky Locklear Jr., Wayne.
I mean, even like being a pit crew member as a kid, or a kid, like I said with Tommy Bird, you sit there and like you think about other divisions and you see a trailer cross the track, you're like, oh, that's going to be a good race tonight.
Yep.
Like, that guy's here. And it's going to be good.
Yep. So, like I said, so you should be proud of yourself for being a part of somebody that every time you show up to the racetrack, they know you are a competitor that's going to win or be at least competitive enough to win.
Absolutely.
So I'll just kind of give you credit there.
I appreciate that. That means a lot.
Yep. So we'll kind of get into we'll dive deep here at this point and talk about last weekend. And again, you've had numerous times as you've been up front. But this weekend, obviously, for yourself, frustrating just because mostly, mostly because of how early the issue was, right? So most drivers wouldn't care if they get wrecked coming to checkers, but it's lap one that's an issue, right? So we talked about, and the reason that I kind of brought you in here and I told you this on the phone call, was this podcast is built for Brian and I to both have our chance to speak our side and to say it out loud. But I'd like you to say out loud, your chance to speak on how you felt the other day went, and the 56 is going to have his chance to speak too. So, you know, just go ahead and just tell everybody how the weekend went and where your brain's at and what you thought.
So we had a long off season. You know, we did a lot of work on the car. Tested a couple weeks ago. We were really, really good. So coming into this weekend, we were good on Friday. Saturday morning, we were good. But the more rubber that laid down on the racetrack, the worse we got. And I don't know if it was the modified rubber or what, but we just lost all of our speed. But so we didn't qualify as good as we wanted to. So we, you know, we start the race, and lap one, we get ran into the outside wall, whether it be accident, whatever, but, you know, kind of the same person several times. It's, you kind of got to start wondering, you know, what's going on here. So, we got run into the wall, bent some stuff in the front of the car, took a good bit of damage. So, you know, we were slow the rest of the night. I think we ended up finishing fifth. It's just frustrating getting wrecked on lap one. First race of the season.
Yep. So, with that, as from Brian and I's side, so we talked about it a little bit with Chris earlier, is that we see both sides of the fence. Like, we've been in the car. I've been a father that has yelled at people numerous times for no reason, really. Like,
you do, like, get pretty animated.
Dude, I get, like, when it, so,
you,
I mean,
tell me the storyline. Jesus,
yeah,
God.
So, when I get to yelling about Owen, it gets weird. But at the same time, it's so hard to manage your passion because, again, like what Donald just said, you worked so hard all season, off season, to get to that point, and then to make one lap and then get in the fence, whether it was on purpose, not on purpose, it doesn't matter, really. When you get put in the fence, that's tough, and to process that. But, you know, Donald, I know – that end of day, like, the car you have is going to win a race before the season's over, if not multiple. But at the same time, like, on Brian and I's side, we battle such a fine line of when to understand what's a driver's issue and then when it's crossed the line to.
So if a caution comes out, we can dissect it much easier at the moment. Which I think what our decision is at the moment helps the driver decipher how they're going to react later on. So we put, if a caution comes out, somebody dumps somebody, we put the driver to the back. Maybe the other driver at that time said, you know what, I'm cool. They put him to the back, we're good. Like, we're moving forward. When it doesn't create a caution and you're still green flag conditions, I can imagine the driver that got the wrongdoing there is going to be hostile the whole time.
Yep.
And I think that's what we had this past weekend. Now, looking at it from, obviously, we're in the tower. We're looking at it from an angle. And I also thought maybe it was a crowding situation. I think we're going to hear another side of it where it was, like, pulled off of it, and then you get fidgety, whatever. Maybe it's a racing deal. But anyhow, I only can imagine where you're coming from, because your past leading up to this point, first race of the season, in the last couple of years, it's been, you know, the same people, same party involved. So I would also be on the side of Donald where, okay, like, let's not start this year off the same way it's been before. And on the same token, if it's a mistake on, like, the 56's part, I didn't mean to do it. Like, I don't be mad at me right now. I didn't mean to do it this time. Like, I promise.
Yep.
So it's a very fine line. So you got to walk. It's tough to decipher. It really is. Like I said before, when it's the same parties involved every time, how do you do that? That's where you and I got to come in, and sometimes it's not good. Sometimes
and that's my issue with it, is how many times do you let the same party do something and not say anything about it? You know, I'm trying to be an easygoing guy. You know, we come to race, we come to have fun. I mean, I'm not into tearing race cars up. That's a lot of work in race cars, a lot of money in race cars. I'm lucky enough to have somebody that, you know, that does the financial part of it. You know, I help contribute some, but, Van is a big part of that, and we have some very good sponsors, you know. So I have an image to uphold for them as well. So I'm not there to tear race cars up. I'm not going to do that week in and week out. So at some point, I got to stand up and say, hey, you know, this is enough. You know, we got to do something about this.
Yeah, 100%. And we totally get it. And that's what I said. The hardest part for Brian and I is understanding the racer side. Say, screw this shit. Like, I'm going to stand up for myself. But at the same time, the racer side, or the racetrack side, we've got to figure out how to make that not be a thing. So,
which I guess we could say for the extracurricular activities, some racetracks say, well, if you do it on the front straightaway, it's fine. No fines.
Yeah, I don't want that.
Like, we don't never advertise that.
Yeah.
But can we really decipher what happened? Well, we knew it happened on the front straightaway. The fans reminded us.
Yeah, yeah. So. But with it, Donald, so I guess we'll ask you and, you know, we'll ask you slash, let's go with the ask you part and ask you part. And then, I'm not going to tell you something, but, because I've now made it weird is, the tell you part is, like, obviously we're just, Brian and I know we can't, let things, go too far without somebody getting hurt. So, it's kind of the end of last year with Ricky Locklear Sr. and Will Brewerton and them using race cars as weapons. So there's a part that on our end we have to be protective of. But, how did you see your day and how, like, that whole thing come to play? I know lap one was the issue, but how did you see it come down in your brain when it went down? What did you see happen, and did you feel like it was done on purpose?
At a point, yeah, I felt like it was done on purpose. Wayne has been doing this a long time. Whether he's got a spotter up on the stand or his spotter is in the pits, which was the case, his spotter was down in the pits from what I was told from a good source. With all those big trailers there, you cannot see. If you're standing on the back straightaway, you cannot see the front straightaway.
No.
So whether his spotter cleared him or not, Wayne knows when somebody's on the outside of him. And I wasn't just at his bumper, I was completely beside him. So Wayne knew there was somebody there. He was trying to clear himself down the front straightaway, and we went off the corner. We were at the flag stand. So he knows how much room he has on the outside of him. So I felt like he came up on purpose. Yeah. Whether it was to squeeze me in the wall, to clear me getting into one, or what have it, I felt like he did it on purpose. So, you know, after the race, we go down the back straightaway, I swerve at him, and we touch a little bit, and he gasses up and hits me in the bumper cover, which no big deal. Come down pit road, I get out my car, I go to him, and we have a discussion, which I felt like at that time it needed to be done.
Yep. So, I mean, well, the definition of discussion is always fun.
Well, I think sometimes crew members get involved, fans get involved, and it just becomes a hostile environment.
Yeah, but, it's so hard because –
Race for great TV.
But I'm saying racing in general is passionate. Like you said, you worked all off season.
Yeah, for late model guys, like we talked about with Chris, like late model guys and modified guys is whatever. But for these guys, I mean, they're doing it for for a hobby,
right?
Like they're and putting their hard earned dollars, their hard earned time in this, and then when you get it the very first week, you get tore up.
Yeah,
it's like, oh my God, really? This again?
Yeah, right.
Especially when it's in a rivalry that dates back for years.
Yep. So we'll go back to us then. So again, hence the battle of what is racetrack, what is driver. On our end, we don't want to ever see anyone argue, right? Like, we don't want this, as far as our side.
No.
But how do you see it as far as the racetrack goes?
Well, you got to look at it. You got to step in at some point because you can't let this evolve into something else. Right. Like, that easily, like Donald's a great driver, that easily could have tore up 10 cars the other night. That was on row two. So, I mean, Donald could not have saved it. He could have yanked down, and like, they all wrecked. And everyone behind him on lap two, I think, they completed lap one, so it was lap two. But it would have tore up everyone behind him.
Right.
So you got to figure out where to step in so this doesn't become a thing moving forward.
Right.
Like I said, the post-race stuff I don't agree with. And, like, some racetracks wouldn't like embody that, say, oh, do it on the front straightaway. Like, we don't want to do that.
No.
Like, we enjoy everybody that comes in. We want to be that personable contact that we always talk about. This treat has to go. But yeah, it's a fine line we got to walk. We have to decipher everything, but that's just not the kind of racing or the personality that we want to take moving forward.
Yeah. So I came here. So Donald, I think it was race one. I won't say names, but we had the same problem. So there was a time where Florence Motor Speedway was known as just nonstop beating each other up, and that is definitely not what I want.
Well, I could say, from what 2012 to 2020, that's when we worked together under Bob Lutz era.
Right.
Like, we had one fight the very last weekend with Armakovich and Boo Boo Dalton, right?
Oh yeah, Boo Boo. Yeah.
I think that was it.
Yep. But
the all those years.
But we're not saying that. We're not saying that that doesn't happen. Like, it shouldn't build. But at the same time, how can we help it? But anyways, so Donald, we 100% agree with your passion, and we 100% agree with where your head was at. And we're not telling you to not be passionate about it. We're just saying out loud that we just...
I mean, you got to have that. We preach passion every week. Yeah. You got to have passion in the sport. Yeah.
But as a racetrack, we can't allow the extracurricular stuff. And we, because if we let that stuff go, then it's going to come back 10 times with... we have another conversation with Wayne, but if we don't fix that, then Wayne's going to come back next week and do something dumb. Yeah. So we
gotta, others may get involved.
Yeah.
That's what I fear. I fear it the other day on lap two, where like that could have been come much worse than what it was.
Yeah. But it's a battle of everyone's coming to the racetrack with the same passion to win a race. And if things don't go their way, and he's got his opinion on Brian and I talked about this numerous times, is that he's got his opinion on what happened and you got your opinion on what happened, and they're never meet in the middle. Like Brian and I put Brian to the rear at Myrtle Beach Speedway.
You said it one more time. We're going to fight
I'm
here.
Telling you, I'm telling you.
You said that for three episodes, and now I'm getting mad.
Because it hurts my feelings. Like, when it went down and
it hurt my feelings. It cost me to win.
Well, I mean, but you did spin him.
Well, he did come up.
Oh
see, there's two sides of every equation. I'm telling you.
So, anyways, Donald, we do appreciate everything you do with us, and we appreciate you being a part of Florence Motor Speedway.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And we hate that anything bad happens to anyone, but it seems like for some reason you catch all of that. You know, it seems like every time there's something bad happens, you're on the wrong side of it. But at the same time, you know, there are parts that, you know, the going to victory lane, maybe not the greatest.
Yeah,
thing.
I mean, like I said, there's never a good problem to have. But sometimes, I think you and your team have to sometimes pat yourself on the back. It's like, you know what, guys, we are in a lot of occasions, but we're always in the hunt.
Yeah, it's because we're in the
hunt.
Like,
moving forward, like, we're going to get these wins. Yep. Like, we're going to get in our stride. We're going to start moving forward. It's going to be like busting them off one after one after one.
Yep.
It's a very tricky situation, unfortunately, but I mean, you guys are always in the hunt. That's what we look at.
But it's racing, man. It's so much fun. Like that's the part we're talking about. Is like, I hate it that there's issues, but at the same time, you wake up every morning and you go to your normal job and you do your normal thing. But racing is the thing.
I'll wake up at 2025 and I still get mad at you at 2018.
Oh, easy. Beep. Sorry. But Donald, he has resented me since that day. Like, Donald, he wouldn't talk to me for 4 weeks straight. Like, we used to go to Buffalo
Wild Wings.
Well,
that's 2017. Same year Lee Pulliam ran. I'm telling you, I had 10 wins that year. It actually would have been 11 had you not put me to the back for middle.
I don't see Brian getting that mad.
No, he gets
thank
mad.
You. No, I don't get mad. It's fine. I'm a very nice guy. Yeah, I'm a very nice guy.
It's all good. But Donald, we'll ask you kind of one last time to say your piece and talk about your team. Like whether you want to talk about last week or not, it doesn't matter. But if you want to talk about your team and what you guys got going forward, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, you know, we're going to put our car back together. You know, like I said, I'm not into tearing up race cars. Heard that I was going to get wrecked next weekend, but the next race. But yeah, you know, we'll deal with that when it comes. But as far as for me, I'm not into tearing up race cars. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not coming to wreck anybody. We come in a race and go for the win. So. That's what our plan is. We're going to get our stuff back together. It's going to cost us a little bit of money, you know, stuff to spend. So we got to pull the rear end out because I think the rear end tube may be bent from getting squeezed up against the wall. I know I got, upper control arm that's bent, ball joint that's bent, fender, nose cone. So we got to spend a little bit of money, get it back together, but you know, we'll be back. And on the 22nd, just got to thank all my support, Sea Island Land Development, Stone Central, Granite Marble Quartz, Low Country Well Drilling, all our partners that help us every week, and we just couldn't do it without them.
Yep. Well, like I said, for sure, the supporters, Van and yourselves, man, we couldn't do it without you. So
each and every week. Yep.
Yep. So we appreciate you guys always showing up and being a part of Florence Motor Speedway. And, you know, Brian and I, obviously, we're aware of some things that we need to clean up on our end. to protect yourself and anyone else. So we'll have that conversation. And but I think end of the day, we just love the sport, and we appreciate what you guys are doing, and Van and yourself are doing to just keep showing up and putting on a good show. So thank you, and we look forward to seeing you on the 22nd. And also, so we are going to speak to the other side of this. He hasn't showed up yet, but we'll speak to him, and I'm sure you'll get a chance to listen to it, because I'm sure it'll be fun. That's part of On Tap, and we'll see you on the other side. Thank you guys for joining us, and we'll see you on the other side.
Thank you guys for having us.
Thank you, Donald.
Unfortunately, Wayne was unable to join us for this podcast. We hope to have him on maybe next week and get his side of the story. But we return you back to your regular scheduled podcast. All right, welcome to On Tap. Welcome back to On Tap. And thank you guys for joining us. Episode 7. Brian and I have been here all day. Trying to put together not just a good show, but a good racetrack. We got Speed Weeks coming up at Southern National this week, so we're trying to get our stuff done here at Florence Motor Speedway, get that stuff done so we can get ready to go to Southern National and get his Mike's got a great show scheduled. We sat here and we talked to Donald, we talked to Chris Williams, we were hoping to speak to Wayne, who is a part of kind of some of the controversy over the last weekend, but all of it, yeah.
Come on, man.
But wasn't available, so it is what it is.
Decline comment.
Yeah. But end of the day, great show. As always, we keep putting out good content, but it's on to Speed Weeks, man. You're going to Southern National this weekend. I'll be there Thursday. You'll be there Saturday. Racing's coming up.
Yep. Looking forward to it. I mean, I think he had to canceled a pro late models, I believe, because he didn't have enough cars. But the Chargers, Benny Sox, Indy cars on Saturday, and then Wednesday on, I mean, late models, 5,000 win every day.
It's crazy.
My God.
Yeah.
I don't know. Makes us look bad, but so many good car count, I believe.
Like I said, end of day, we're trying to help racetracks in general, but especially Mike Diaz and the Diaz family.
They go above and beyond.
Yes.
They get a bad rap, but my God, man, Mike Diaz is so passionate about the sport like we are. Like passion. We share that same word how many times?
Oh, you say it every episode.
Yeah. And he exemplifies that every time.
Yep. So looking forward to going to Southern National this weekend. We got Saturday. It's kind of a starter to give us our chance to do Ulster Broadcasting at his place. And then Wednesday, though, come right out of the box and I-95 showdown.
Yep.
We got a lot of our guys that we know are going to be there, so it's going to be a hell of a show. So we're looking forward to it. Brian's going to be calling all the races. That's always been our thing, is making consistency as far as calls and our staff. So Brian's going to be making all the calls at Southern National in the next few weeks. So looking forward to that, and looking forward to On Tap going forward. Hopefully, maybe we'll get Wayne to come back and say his piece at some point.
I hear crickets.
Yeah.
Crickets.
Yeah. So On Tap is here. It's on episode 7, and we're looking forward to episode 8. And so we'll see you next week. Thank you for joining us on Tap.